All right, welcome back to the North Star Method podcast, where we give you the mental skills to be at your best when it matters most. My name is Sebastian. I am the co-founder and CEO of North Star Performance Psychology.
And my name is Sean, co-founder and director of mental performance.
On today's episode, we are once again diving into the mailbag sent to us by members of our community. If you're interested in getting your questions on the list, today's the day to sign your deal with North Star. Head over to northstarknows.com and see if there's a way for you to get involved. Without further ado, we're going to question number one.
Mm-hmm.
What do we got?
So a question that I've got from somebody recently, and honestly that I get a lot, considering how much we talk about how this is for everybody, is what does performance look like outside of sports? Now, keep in mind, Oxford Dictionary defines performance as the action or process of carrying out or accomplishing an action, task, or function. So essentially, just like you've said before, a lot of words for doing.
Yeah, so I'll never forget being in an entrepreneurship class with Dr. Mark Alyagi, the former co-director of the Masters of Arts in Sport and Performance Psychology at the University of Denver. That's a mouthful. And, of course, where we are soon to be alumni from myself, of course, Sean has already done the deed. He said that to perform literally just means to do. And when you hear performance, most people, their mind goes to elite athletes or actors or people who are giving a performance. But the truth is, you perform every single day. Anything that you do, that you prepare for, and that you want to do your best, that is a performance. And that's why we mean that mental performance is not just for elite athletes. It's for everybody who wants to be at their best when it matters most. So what are some scenarios that matter most to most people? Well, what roles do you play in your life? Maybe it's your roles within your family or at work or within your community. And certainly a big part of those roles is how you deal with adversity. We've talked a lot about our personal experience with mental performance helping us surpass expectations when facing health challenges. And we know that that's the case for a lot of people. For example, a good friend of mine, Hunter Thompson, has torn his ACL not once, not twice, three different times. And you can imagine that after doing that recovery twice, the dread that goes into knowing that you got to strap up and do it again. But here's a guy who just seems to, no matter what happens to him, he finds a way to frame it that not only makes sure that the adversity is something that is helpful and productive in his life, but also in a way that he believes helps him surpass recovery expectations. I was talking with him over the weekend, and he was explaining how he had noticed something that I know we've both noticed in whether it's the spinal cord injury community, the chronic illness community. Within this ACL community, there's a lot of limiting beliefs. This idea that people tell me that this is how long it takes, I'll never be able to dunk or run or whatever again. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with a guy called Knees Over Toes on Instagram.
Oh, yeah.
He works with people who have had knee injuries all the time, and they're told all of these things by all these genius, brilliant doctors, and no disrespect to the profession. I mean, we need them. Mm-hmm. However, the way that they speak about what's possible after the injury puts a limitation on what you believe is possible, and therefore on the upper limits of what your recovery is. And so he's got people who are like 65 years old dunking a basketball because he's got them training in ways that you otherwise would not be advised to, because you straight up just don't believe it's going to help. And so Hunter, about to go into his third ACL, is about to get surgery to start on that road to recovery, is going to be documenting the process and showing how mental skills in the North Star method can help him surpass expectations and come back from that ACL. I know he was training for the Austin Marathon. He had to go down there with all his friends. He told me that even up until the day of the race, he was like, I'm going to do it. And obviously his friends didn't let him do it.
He was torn ACL at that point.
Yeah. I don't know if it's a full tear this time, but either way, like definitely could not run.
Yeah. 26 miles, even on a partial tear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that just shows, right, like the discipline that it takes to push through that pain. If you put it in the wrong direction, like you can push through in a way that is not productive. And that's kind of the default if we don't intentionally channel that energy into the direction of shattering those limiting beliefs. And so his journey is going to be very interesting to follow. We will update you on where you can follow along with that. But our goal is to have a whole bunch of guys like this who are sort of North Star ambassadors in a way that can show you how mental performance can help in day-to-day life, not just in elite performance domains.
Yeah, the injury recovery thing is huge. We talked a little bit about Chris Godwin last week.
Yep.
You know, back to work is kind of that mantra that he has, like understanding that it is possible. He's done it before. And so is Hunter, clearly. It's his third one. That you can return back to, you know, the state that you were in, depending on these injuries, or you could at least return to greatness if it's not possible to get back to where you're going. So you think about this, you know, in my case, the spinal cord injury community, if I would have taken what the doctor said, I would not be where I am. I wouldn't be moving muscles below my shoulders. I wouldn't be living an independent life. It really takes just kind of understanding here. You do have this power to find your own path, if you will. Like, you have to have the wherewithal to think for yourself and challenge these automatic negative thoughts, which is the theme we've talked about a lot lately, against kind of the grim possibility of not getting there. So maybe the studies show that it's really, really unlikely, but what can you do to sort of overcome those boundaries? What kind of therapies can you get? What kind of treatments can you get that are outside of the scope of what these studies would kind of recommend that would actually get you there? So I've thought about like every single PT session I've had as a performance, every single like attempt at an uneven transfer out of my wheelchair as a performance, because I know that I need to keep my focus on what matters. I know that I need to keep my focus on the process of the movement and actually executing the task. And a performance for me, for example, that is completely not sport related is when I have to put on shoes when I have to be somewhere shortly, which is kind of a weird performance to think about. But for those of you who don't know and haven't figured it out by now, I'm a quadriplegic and have a lot of trouble moving things below my shoulders at this point. So to put on my shoes, what I have to do is like lift my leg, essentially cross my leg over onto the leg that's not crossed and put on the shoe from there, finagling with the little dexterity that I do have. The leg is like the heaviest part of the body, pretty much. Maybe the head is heavier. I don't know the top of my head, but when you're fighting through things like spasticity, which is really a somatic anxiety response just due to lack of communication between your nervous system and your brain because of the disruption in the spinal cord, it perceives it as a noxious stimulus. Any stimulus that it feels can be noxious, which means like guard, which means like flex. So you'll spasm against the movement that you're trying to do. So if I'm trying to lift my leg up, my glutes will turn on and say, put your leg back down because that's where it knows it's safe, for example. So I need to kind of control my breathing and focus on just loosening the leg to bring it up to where I can cross it. From there, I need to shift my focus toward get the shoe, make sure you don't drop the shoe, you know, manage it over the toes, bring it over the heel. All of these things are process-oriented thoughts that I need to kind of think about to get this done in a way that I'm able to make my appointment on time. And it's funny because when I'm really close, it's worse. When I'm really thinking about I need to get here, I'm not going to get here. What if I don't get my shoe on in time? Because a lot of times it takes multiple attempts. That does make the outcome more likely to be bad. The more I'm like, hey, I'm going to be a little late regardless, maybe. Let's really breathe here and take the time that I need to actually get the shoes on so I can mitigate the lateness. That usually yields the best performance. So again, keeping your focus on what you're doing, your controllables, the actions, the task at hand, no matter what the performance domain might look like, is the way to execute them, you know, to the best of your ability.
So mental performance is the playbook for defying the odds. And you defy the odds every day if you're somebody who is trying to recover from an injury, if you're somebody who is trying to have a career while building a family, if you're somebody who's trying to build a business. These are things that maybe there isn't a Super Bowl for, but that are just as, if not more, improbable. And if you bring the same skills and preparation that the pros do to your performances, you can guarantee that you're going to get the results that you want faster, and you're going to make your success a lot more likely than those people who just leave it up to chance. That being said, one thing that came to mind, so in the chronic illness space, one thing that I always talked about when I was getting better was this idea of so because these people, including myself, are so sick that you can't get out of bed, you spend a lot of time online. And there were two main online communities for people recovering from this long COVID. The first one was people who were still in it. And I want to say at the time, there was like 60,000 people in this community. The other one was for people who have recovered. And there was maybe not even 6,000 people in it at the time. You would think that you'd go into the recovery community and like get the answers and go back to the people who are sick, and they'd be thrilled to hear. But when you go in there and you say, hey, the common theme between everybody who already got better is that they took control of their mindset in such a way that they could regulate their nervous system, that they could make it more likely that their body would be in the state where they could heal. Right? This is important because we talk about how your nervous system relates to your physical movements. It has to feel safe. It has to relearn that it's okay to do things that it doesn't think it can do. That's your ticket out. Here it is. The response, it's pushback. They feel that it's oftentimes dismissing their experience by saying, oh, if it was that easy, then I would have already done it. The list goes on. The point is, like, why do so many people reject the idea that they have control over a lot more of their destiny than they think they do? Is it an overwhelm of responsibility? Is it low self-efficacy or self-esteem, cultural norms? Like, how can we get people to realize that it does not matter what happens to you, it's your response that dictates the quality?
Yeah, so I think a lot of the reason, I think it's probably a combination of a lot of that, but a lot of the reason people don't believe they're able to take this agency and this actual control of their situation to the best that they can is because that it usually doesn't work first, right? Like I've been told a bunch of times by like mentors I've had in the spinal cord injury community, like focus on your breath when you do these things. And we talked about Steph Curry before in episodes. Even Rory McIlroy just came out after the Masters and was talking about how important training breathing is. For so long, I was just like, dude, I can breathe. Like, I've tried meditating and deep breathing. Like, it doesn't work for me. For anybody who has that mindset, I would beg you to challenge this. These skills do not work at first. Well, maybe they work decently at first, but think about, we give the sport analogy all the time. The first time you shoot a three-pointer, you're not going to look like Damian Lillard in that buzzer beater. Like, you're just not. It takes training, it takes hard work. Everything worth doing, for the most part, takes a significant amount of commitment and work. And like you said, the overwhelm of responsibility probably does play a factor there, understanding that it takes a lot. Like, making it out of these situations that are bleak and that most people don't get out of takes what most people won't do. And that sounds really good at first because you hear you do all of this stuff and you're going to have a great life. You're like, yeah, I'll do it. And then it doesn't work. And you're like, shit, what do I do now? But I mean, you hear it time and time again. The most successful people in any sort of domain will tell you what matters is how many times you get back up. I think it's a Rocky quote. It's not how many times you get knocked down, it's about how many times you get back up after. And that really, I would just say, is the cornerstone of what defines this. Keep trying, keep finding a way. These skills are tried and true. And if you get into a rhythm and you can really be consistent, they will work out for you.
So when it comes to mental performance, training mental skills, it's not easy. It is simple. And a lot of times we experience this mismatch where we're trying to deal with the situation and we end up attacking like the emotions about the situation versus the actual facts. On one hand, you have people who are like stone cold and they dismiss the emotions and push them down and just deal with the facts. And on the other hand, you have people who kind of wallow and ruminate in the emotions and ignore the facts altogether. Mm-hmm. Both of these are black and white thinking. You know this, basic cognitive distortion. You understand that that's just your brain's natural response trying to help you. The truth is that you need to feel and accept all of the emotions. Yeah, it sucks when you tear your ACL for a third time. Yeah, it sucks when the doctors are telling you you're not going to get better. And you can feel that, like whatever that looks like for you, talking about it, crying, you know, whatever it looks like for you. But then can you refocus on what's in your control and the task at hand? It's not complicated. It's not rocket science. It's just psychology, and everybody can benefit from it. The second piece to it being simple but not easy is that there's a huge opportunity right now for anybody that adopts mental skills training because of how many people are overlooking it. If you start doing these things in any area of your life, this is by far the best competitive advantage that you can give yourself, whether you're a trader on Wall Street or whether you're just trying to recover from a surgery, right? So this is your opportunity to get ahead of almost everybody in the world in any way that you can imagine, just by doing the things that are simple but not easy. Huge opportunity that most people are not realizing, and we're screaming it from the rooftop. So if you identify with that, if you want to have that competitive advantage, like, be part of this community, be part of this movement, because not only is it going to help you, we know firsthand the deep gratification that comes from seeing the look on people's faces 2, 4, 6 weeks into mental skills training when they're like, oh, the light bulb goes off. Like, I finally see how breathing and doing breathing exercises has shifted my nervous system into the mode it needs to be in to get done what I need to get done. And that's a perfect segue into our next question, which is, the Masters just happened recently. Congrats to Rory McIlroy for finally completing the Grand Slam, getting his green jacket, being enshrined into one of the most, if not the most legendary group of champions in sports. It took him a long time to get there. And so what's the difference? How come now in 2025, Rory finally takes the win at Augusta?
Yeah, so it has certainly taken a long time. For those of y'all who are not familiar with Rory's history, he had a near win or a near loss or whatever. He came, I think it was second, but close to winning in 2011, did not win. And over those next 3 years to 2014, he won the 3 out of 4 majors that it takes to get a Grand Slam, which I believe is the Open, the US Open, PGA, and the Masters. He had all but the Masters going into 2014. He lost again in 2014, which, you know, people were saying there was a big narrative, you know, he just can't win the Masters. He's a choke artist in these situations. Fast forward 10 years later or so, I guess it's 11, but we find that he won, and not in a blowout by any means. When, if you watched it, you saw he did, you could argue he choked on the 18th hole, on that last stroke, on that last 6-foot out putt, and it was right next to the hole that should have won it. Went to sudden death. And like you were saying off camera, pretty much just textbook picture perfect golf to really lock in there and win. Now, to answer your question, why did it take so long? Why did he win it this time? Several factors go into this. One thing is, you know, he felt that his game was as sound as it had ever been. He didn't let these losses, you know, be disruptors of him perfecting the craft. He's won 3 other majors. He's a hell of a golfer. I mean, now he's, again, one of the best of all time, arguably. He's won all 4. keeping your head down and knowing that, like, what do I need to do to win this? It's to really focus on playing the best golf possible. How do you do that? Be intentional and practice about the things that you need to work on doing the most, as well as making sure you hit all the stops to make sure that your holistic, you know, performance is being developed. Another thing is another clip that came out is that he was intentional about some mental skills, particularly breathing. He mentioned on a clip, I forget where I saw it, but he's a big mouth breather. And as we know from just studying this stuff, mouth breathing is very much correlated to shallow breathing, chest breathing. And chest breathing is not optimal. You want to breathe from your gut, from your diaphragm. This allows for the proper kind of like exchange of air, exchange of oxygen in your blood. When you're mouth breathing, you're almost putting yourself into a state of fight or flight.
Yeah.
You're signaling that you need to take these short breaths to get like desperate oxygen. And that's putting you into a state of survival, which we've talked so much about at this point, does not like facilitate optimal performance. By training your breath diaphragmatically in a controlled manner, you're training your nervous system to be at bay. You're training your nervous system to be in this sweet spot of composure to allow your body to not have to fight an uphill battle. When you're in this regulated state, as we've said, things fall into place. And when you're intentional about training these things, you know, you ask golfers especially, but really any athlete, what percent of your sport is mental? It's usually like 90% is the answer. How much of your training is mental? Usually zero. Maybe you get 10, whatever. By kind of balancing this discrepancy, you kind of approach your performance in a holistic sense and allow for every aspect of it to thrive, not just the physical, but all of the mental and the emotional that comes with it. So I think, you know, a mixture of all of these things, training hard, keeping your head down, knowing that you're as good as you are, as well as accepting and training the things that need to be trained, probably led to this outcome.
Yeah. So if you ever played golf, you know, it's one of, if not the most mental sport that there is. Mm-hmm. And, Rory talks about working with a pretty well-known sports psychologist, Bob Rotella, who I believe has some ties with the faculty that we've worked with. And if you've ever watched Full Swing, the documentary on Netflix, where they follow all sorts of PGA Tour and LIV golfers, a number of them work with a performance psychologist to train things like breathing. And you know, the truth is, right, there's so many people who are still afraid to approach that. And yet we see what the results are. Going back to our definition of performance, being at your best when it matters most, you've trained, like, you know what to do. There's not a golfer on tour who doesn't know what shot they want to hit and who can't hit it when they're on the range. They can put the ball wherever they want. It's just about being able to access that training in those high pressure moments. And if you're in fight or flight, if you're in the wrong state, you're literally putting a bottleneck on your access to your skills. And so let's connect some dots here. When you talk about people choking, what's literally happening is they are choking off access to the skills that they've already built. And when you learn to use things like breathing or to create whatever your performance routine is, and you get into the flow, you open up that bottleneck so that you can flow the skills and the training that you've done into the present moment, which is where high performance happens. So you can clearly see how this stuff is all connected. It's very simple, but it's not easy. And you got to start working with somebody if you want to push yourself over the edge and make sure that all that work that you do is actually being used when it matters most. And so this is important, not just for Rory and for you guys trying to win green jackets, but if you golf for business or on the weekends, mm-hmm. that's your opportunity to train mental skills that are going to help you throughout the entire rest of your life. And so one example is, so when I go out golfing, I've been using the North Star AI as my caddy while I'm golfing. And not only because, you know, it has general knowledge, it can remember what my distances on my clubs are, and I can tell it the conditions. I can tell it this is a par five, and you know I'm hitting from this tee. How should I hit it? But I can also tell it how I'm feeling, the sensations that I'm having in my body, the stuff that I'm bringing in from the day that might be affecting me. And it's happened before where it's like, look, you would usually hit your nine here today. Like you're trying to kill the ball. It's probably because you're dealing with XYZ. Let's do a 30-second visualization before we hit this ball, right? I shot my best ever 36 through 9 using that, which my prior record was like 41. So it was like a huge jump using the North Star AI while I was on the course. This is something that you'll be able to do soon as well, whether it's before your pickup game, before your school play, or before you go play nine. So North Star AI will be the way that you can integrate mental performance with your sports performance. And it's also smart enough to figure out how that applies to the rest of your life. So when you're talking to it about a situation that you're facing at work, it'll be able to call back and say, hey, remember when we talked about this, you know, when you were on hole three, right? So making those connections to show how mental performance matters, not just in sports, but in the rest of life, using sports as a training ground for the rest of life. Not only is it more fun, not only are you going to play better and have a competitive edge against your friends, it's going to improve all the other areas of your life as well.
Yeah, this is something that I try to tell pretty much everybody I work with is what sports are is just a great opportunity to use these skills to thrive in something that you care about. And really, there's so much translation into outside life, especially, you know, when you're in mental performance and mental performance coaching. When you start out, you're getting 12-year-old athletes, you know, like you're getting youth, you're getting maybe some high school. If you're lucky, you get some college. Not that there's anything wrong with working with these populations by any means, but what I thought about it is I almost have a responsibility to sort of show them how this could also be developmental in other areas. And understanding, especially Rory, if Rory's working with a mental performance coach or a sports psychologist after 30 years of professional golf, if that's what it is, the mental journey takes a long time. And there's ups and downs. There's new challenges, especially going from like amateur to pro. There's new contracts on the line. There's sponsorships. There's like making tournaments. There's new sources of pressure that disrupt flow. They disrupt your ability to really like actually do the thing that you like doing. So understanding that like this is just kind of a journey that takes a while. And it's funny with Rory, it's been about 10 years. I'm actually coming on 10 years of spinal cord injury in August, and understanding the connection there, trying to tie it, how many ups and downs there's been, how many new mental struggles there have been. And I think I said it on a couple episodes ago. I'm now kind of having stressors that my friends would have or able-bodied people would have that are in their, you know, 20s and, you know, trying to make something of themselves. And these new stressors have been like almost harder to deal with because I don't have the experience. And, you know, luckily I have the tools, I have the knowledge, I have, you know, North Star AI to help me out as well on this. But the mental performance journey is everlasting. And if you can recognize how to take what you learn from the adversity, from the hardship of whatever the struggle is, the more equipped you are to deal with anything that comes your way in the future.
It's crazy to think that if you train mental skills and you get the mindset right, life becomes a different game for you than it is for everybody else, because it doesn't matter what happens to you. Now, you aren't bound by your reactions. You're empowered by your responses. Adversity is an opportunity to sharpen your character. It's a chance not only to show yourself who you are, but to set an example for all the people around you and all the people that you lead. It's a chance to make your community stronger. And it's a chance to show people who deal with whatever you've dealt with that more is possible than what they're being told. Part of us as humans, we want to inspire people. We want to be inspired. Hope is one of the most powerful emotions that we can experience, and living in a place of motivation and hope and drive is one of the most potent forces that we can harness. There's no stimulant, there's no belief that is stronger than the knowledge that whatever happens to me today is going to be a beautiful part of my story, no matter how difficult, no matter how challenging. And you ultimately become not only a more resilient and mentally stronger human, but also more relatable. Your connections become deeper, your emotions become more colorful, and
yes,
you are in charge of the quality of your life, no matter what is going on in the outside world.
Mm-hmm. You find a lot of times that, at least I have found a lot of times, that people that have gone through serious adversity or trauma, or at least have been adjacent to it, seem to be more down to earth and have their priorities in line more. And that's because a lot of times, unfortunately, it takes something like this to really set your priorities in line. You hear like, a healthy man wants a million things. A sick man on his hospital bed wants one thing, to be healthy. And so when I was injured, for example, it really kind of shed light on that. What's important? My health and being alive and being with my family and the people that I care about. And like we've said before, I don't think it should take breaking your neck to realize that your health is important, or that you need to, like, you know, work hard and do well and like in the ways that you want to and really live through your values. But that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to kind of show you here through these conversations, through our work with clients and otherwise, that you have the ability to sort of shift your life's narrative. You can make it a beautiful story. You can be the author of your own story. You don't have to be the reader of it.
And that goes back to an all-time quote that you said last week, which is that you're a lot better off talking to yourself than listening to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And too many people have not had the realization that they're not the reader, they're the author. But it's a great sense of responsibility that comes with picking up that pen. And a lot of times you need support to feel like, okay, like, I'm going to give myself that job of being in charge of my life. So many people, and you certainly know somebody who knows everything that's wrong in their life, and they'll tell you all the time, I know I need to do this, I know I need to do that. They're the most frustrating type of person to be around. Mm-hmm. I would even argue that you probably got to get rid of them. Doesn't matter how much you care about them, you got to keep them at a distance, because those types of people drag you down. But you can love them in a way that can at least support them on their journey to realizing that they can pick up that pen. Because in order to feel that you deserve to be the author of your own life, you got to feel supported. And that's why we're building communities that people can be a part of, because this is not a journey that you go on alone. And a lot of the communities that are based on adversities, whether it's injuries or illnesses, are doing the complete opposite of what they're supposed to do.
Oh my God, dude, the spinal cord injury support group on Facebook. If you want to get better and thrive, do not follow.
Yeah, and I mean, I hate to say it, because there was a part of me when I got better that felt like, did I do enough to give back to that community, because I'm not in it anymore? And the truth is, in order to get out of it, I had to get out of it. So, you know, I wish those people the best, but this is the best thing that I can do to help them, is to show that there is a community that you can be a part of that will look at your adversity with you and say, we got this. You know, this is something that is going to make your life more enriching in the long run. And again, that's not to dismiss all the emotions and the grief that comes with experiences like this.
Especially when you see people getting out of it and you aren't. Like, for example, I one time posted in the spinal cord injury support group on Facebook, because I was so stoked with like a new therapy I had gotten at Bar West Performance Center. We've talked about Bar West before, one of our partners, and I was just like so ecstatic with how it went that I posted a video of like what the exercise was. And I was like, if you're in South Florida, you got to check this place out. Now, if you're in Colorado, you got to check this place out. And I got like so much hate. I was like, guys, I'm trying to help you. Like, what are you thinking here? And they're like, oh, like, must be nice to have that ability. right? Must be nice to not be like completely bedridden. Like, this is what got me here. This type of stuff is what got me here. I'm trying to show everybody so that they don't have to like do a bunch of unnecessary BS to get to like where I am. Not that again, like not to exemplify myself, but like you got to be willing to try.
Yeah, and we do acknowledge that these people have experienced a trauma unlike any other. And when you experience trauma, your body forgets how to relax. You live in fight or flight and you fall victim to cognitive distortions. So the way that you see the world is simply not clear. And it's not up to us how long it takes people to realize that that's where they are. And they everyone has to go on their journey to kind of getting building the self-awareness to say, like, oh, this is how my perspective is skewed right now. The worst thing that you can do, whether you're in psychology or whether you're just trying to support a friend, is crash people down into reality. Maybe you've tried it before, you just want to give somebody a gut check. Very few people are going to respond well to that. The truth is, we have to extend patience, compassion, and empathy to people that are traumatized, but also we can't treat them like they're fragile, right? And when you do something like that, it's easy to regret it. And I've been in the same position. But they're going to remember it. So, how many times have you been in an argument or a difficult conversation where you were really defensive, and then later you realized either that the intent from the other side was to help, or at the very least they made a point or two that was helpful, and then you want to come back to it. Ideally, you live in that state so you can always receive things for what they are and see them clearly. But if you don't, in some time, ideally you will. So we do acknowledge just the profound and pervasive nature of those traumatic experiences, and at the same time, a community that is built on a victim identity, I mean, it's just not going to get you the results that you're looking
It's
for.
just you're going to be the victim of the loss. Like, the more you have this external locus of control, as we call it, this belief that you don't have any agency or any influence at all as to what happens to you, and you're a victim of the situation, those are the people that don't thrive. I don't want to say lose, but like, kinda. And those who, have this internal locus of control, I can do what I can to influence the situation. I can do ideally everything I can, but I can do something. We find that this is what builds the momentum, this snowballs the progress, and keeps the mind on the controllables of what will eventually get you out of it, or at least get you to the best state possible.
Maybe the most important first shift that you can make if you are still kind of in that trauma, fight or flight, and you're experiencing victim mindset is to shift to a beginner mindset. Because once you go through something that other people haven't been through, you do have this feeling of like, they don't know. Like, nobody knows what I know. And it's true. But also, who's going to give Rory tips? Like, are you going to tell him how to win the Masters? This is a guy who,
Who's Tom Brady's quarterback coach? Kind of thing.
exactly, right? Like, what are you going to tell this guy? But Brady still had a QB coach. And so these are guys that are open to learning like beginners, even though they aren't. And you have to have that beginner mindset. It's positively correlated with all performance outcomes. And that's how you get your foot in the door to doing the things that are simple, not easy, but simple, so that you can get better. You've heard it time and time again. Rory, Steph Curry, even Muhammad Ali talking about how breathing and just the mental side of the game is what pushed them over the edge. And so, if you're listening to today's episode and you are dealing with an adversity in your personal life, or you consider yourself a performer, whether that's as a parent or a sibling or a leader or a team captain, we have a way for you to get involved. We have a community of people likely who are doing things similar to you. And we're building a world where you can connect with them, where you can work with a coach, where 24/7 there are tools for you to train mental skills and improve your mental performance so that you can be at your best when it matters most, so that no matter what happens to you in life, you can make the absolute most of it because you only get to do it once. And so, if you're interested in finding a way to get involved, Again, you can always go to northstarknows.com, take a look at everything we offer. And if there's something that you have an idea about that you don't see, you can email us, go@northstarknows.com. Always available on Instagram as well.
DMs are open at North Star Method and North Star Knows, as well as my personal at Sean Mahoney MPC, M as in Monday, or mental performance coach, not NPC, non-like character. But yeah, please, like, we love this, the community aspect of all this. Like, we believe that it's just so dire. So, like, get involved.
Yeah, North Star is a movement, and we will not stop until training the mind is as commonplace as training the body, and people are repping the North Star all over the world. So you have a chance to be part of it. You have a chance to get in early and say, hey, I was there while they were building that. Yeah. All right. So by now, being at your best when it matters most is not rocket science. It's just psychology. And there's so many ways to do it. Even though it's not easy, it is simple. And we have the ways to make it simple for you. As always, if you're interested in supporting North Star, you can do so by liking or subscribing on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, or Amazon Podcasts. Give us a follow at North Star Method on Instagram. And once again, if you want to get in the queue to have your questions answered, find a way to sign your deal with North Star, join the community, and get priority access to the Q&A.
With that, love y'all.
And we'll see y'all next week.
Peace.